From Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live. My name's Carr with my BFF from the Yucatan. Baby, Kia, how's it going?
It's going.
Austin, Texas.
It's going pretty good. Is that how they say Texas there?
No, but everybody in this town knows who Pleblab and Austin is now. At this point, because we're famous, we are worldwide famous. Stacker News is officially in the Yucatan. You're welcome.
Oh, wow, that's great. Do you have like women?
I brought stickers. I brought stickers. Plaster that everywhere. There you go.
Okay.
This is what cool. I do.
You do Pleblab things, and you do conferences.
No, but yeah, we had it was crazy, dude. There was the biggest syndicated national Mexico television thing yesterday. It was wild. It was absolutely wild. They're interviewing Francisco, and then there was people out the door, at the White Paper House. It was insane. It was literally insane. All the sponsors got famous. So there you go. Stacker News was a sponsor for the Yucatan, and we got Stacker News on Mexico TV now, so there you go. And then also, he talked about Pleblab and Austin, he talked about Yopaki, and then it got so big, and then the local news came. Literally, the local news came later on, and they interviewed him, so we had to slow down the conference, and then it was busy. It was way busier yesterday, but there was a lot of alpha today for the people that stayed. But yeah, when you do back-to-back conferences, it's hard to keep people's attention for 2 days. It really is, but today was all about the builders shipping in Pleblab, and there was a lot of really good content that got shipped. The people in Pleblab did really well. So we'll talk about it more later.
Okay. Well, that's great to hear that things went well and everyone's famous now, apparently, in Mexico at least.
And, I mean, they're all
the places to be.
Stacker News? El Stacker News? Oh.
Is that how you'd say it?
I don't know. We have to ask Francisco. Is it El Stacker News or D Stacker News or Z Stacker News? I don't know. I guess it would be L Stacker News.
Yeah, L Stacker News. But is Stacker? You want the Spanish? What is Stacker in Spanish? What is news in Spanish? That's probably.
I don't know what it would be. Interesting. If you've never seen this crazy show before, it's called Stacker News Live. We keep telling you guys to unsubscribe, but you guys don't unsubscribe. You guys are actually subscribing, and it's wild. So last week, I think we had 438 or 37 subscribers, and then people subscribed. It's dumb. Stop subscribing. You're gonna silence me and Keon by subscribing, right, Keon? I mean,
oh yeah, yeah. It's bad. We'll have to tell the truth. And because you can say the truth, or you can say the truth as long as you're not popular. So we'll have to start lying to everyone. It's kind of the big problem that we have. We'll have to start talking about the ETFs and Tether,
treasury companies,
macro stuff. We'll probably get really big on macro. Yeah, Carl will be like the next Lynn Alden, probably.
Wow.
Macro. Yeah. Wow. I'll be pressing fish probably. I got the jaw on
it. I'm so glad they don't watch the show. But yeah, last week we had a silent payments for Bitcoin. That was a really good conversation we had. And that one got clipped by Wumble, and he literally had 123 views. So I think they're subscribing because they like the alpha that we're dropping. Obviously, I bought a sticker with Bitcoin, that Love for the Game one. He clipped that. No one cares about that. So I think the people like the technical stuff, honestly. So maybe that's why they're subscribing. Who knows? Anyways, we're going to jump into the top five stories of the week. Let's start with the number five. Is this the number five top story, the wallet one, WOS?
Yes, it is.
Yes. All right. Does Wallet and Satoshi make all user balances public via Spark? This is in the Lightning territory, October 8th from Scoresby. 14 comments, 2,234 sats. Keon, yeah, what's your take on all this that went down this week?
Yeah, so for people that don't know, Wallet of Satoshi left the United States, I don't know, probably early 24. There was a, I think it was around, it was, I don't know, it was like late 23. They're just like, we're pulling out of the United States. It's like they had talked to, they'd gotten big enough and they started talking to lawyers, and lawyers told them, you know what, you're breaking the law in the United States, providing a custodial wallet that allows people to send money to each other. And so they pulled, they didn't really say all that, but they pulled out of the United States likely for legal reasons. And they continued operating elsewhere. And then they started teasing a few months ago that they were going to come back to the United States in a non-custodial fashion, meaning they don't have to comply with the same regulations because they're not taking custody of people's money. And most people figured they were going to use Spark, because Spark had been teasing similarly that they had kind of, they had finished their Spark chain thing, and then there were other just like kind of rumors swirling. And so this week, Wallet of Satoshi released on the App Store, on the App Stores in the United States, and you can now in the United States download Wallet of Satoshi, and it does have, in fact, or it is in fact using Spark. The only problem that people noticed either before or after they released is that in the invoices that pay to your Wallet of Satoshi wallet, it allows, if you look at it closely enough in the right way, it allows you to determine what their Spark address is. And Spark has a public ledger, kind of like mempool.space, but for Spark chain. And you can go and look at that Wallet of Satoshi user's balance and all of their transactions, which is bad for privacy, for hopefully for obvious reason.
So it's all been verified, Keon, or no? Is it all been verified? Yeah. Yeah. So we have the usual people like Justin. He's been a big proponent against Spark. Looks like you came in there and said it's not the pub key that you look up. You need to look at the route hints to extract the Spark address. Looks like Scoresby came in with Ben Carman's tool. What's Lightning Decoder?
Yeah, Lightning Decoder is just a website. I think Zebedee, it's a website that Zebedee spun up many years ago. Mm. It's just a simple website where you can plug in a Bolt 11 and extract the details from it. It doesn't show you enough information where you can get the Spark address. You kind of have to go a little deeper in the invoice to get the Spark address out of it. Ben Carman made a tool that, like a really simple tool that extracts it. And then shortly after this kind of came out, or this was being discussed, or Wallet of Satoshi balances are public, other people chimed in and said that that's like a choice that Wallet of Satoshi is making. They don't have to do that. Apparently in Breeze's implementation of Spark, they're not revealing the Spark address and the invoices. So for some reason, Wallet of Satoshi didn't opt out of that or opt-in in, I don't know. Regardless,
so this is a Wallet of Satoshi decision, it sounds like, is what you're saying.
I think it's like, it's probably like a Spark default issue is what I would guess. And then Wallet of Satoshi didn't go out of their way to help people maintain slightly better privacy. Even so, I guess, because there's this public explorer, this mempool.space for Spark chain, you can do, even if you're using a wallet that obscures your Spark address, I can zap you a pattern of zaps at the right cadence, the right amounts, and then I can go and I can look in the Spark chain explorer and determine which Spark address is yours from that. So even if I can't see it in the Bolt 11 address, I can do timing analysis and figure out which is Carr's Spark address, how much money is Carr sending to his sugar babies,
yeah,
that kind of stuff.
I don't have sugar babies, but Thank you for
sure you don't. you're famous in Mexico now.
Always been a one woman man, Keon. That's just how I roll. But I will say this though. I mean, there's a couple takes I have on this, but I would love to hear yours. I mean, what's your take on all this? Like, I think you know my take on this, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. What I'd guess is, so there's a lot to say about this. You could come at it from many angles. A lot of, you know, you could take the angle, well, Spark is trying to comply and be as regulatory compliant as possible. And what they're going to do is they're going to sacrifice user privacy for that. And that could be what's going on. My like less cynical take, although I'm sympathetic to the take where they are trying to comply in a regulatory fashion, is I think they're just going to market with a UX and seeing if that UX has product market fit before they begin doing anything better than what it currently is. So this is kind of their version of a minimum viable product. And then later, if people really like this solution for the Lightning Network, I can imagine them perhaps making it more robust and more private. Although, you know, maybe they don't ever have to do that if they find that users don't care about it. Mm. And it also helps their regulatory, like, arbitrage type of situation.
Yeah, I think I have a different take. Obviously, it's going to be way different than yours. I think there's a couple of things to this. I think you're right. I do think David Marcus, you know, came into the space to lead in this area when it comes to Lightning, and that's what he's going to do. The guy doesn't miss. I mean, he's ex PayPal, he's ex Facebook, and he's talked in front of the Senate hearing when it came to Libra. He knows exactly what those roads look like when he went down them last. And I think you're right. I think there is some sort of, you know, maybe he sees some future regulatory hurdle. I'm sure he has his reasons as a CEO to think for that. I see it as plain as day. And this is kind of what I've been telling people for the past, you know, six to nine months in the lab is like, I actually think David Marcus is coming in the Lightning Network. He's trying to take over the whole thing. Like, he's trying to take over the whole pie. And I think for the first time, I would say since the beginning, I would say Jack Dorsey finally has a competition, right? Like, Cash App is the most popular app. Everybody uses it. And there hasn't really been a competitor outside of Strike. And I think David Marcus is like, no, I'm going to come in there and I'm going to take market share. And not only am I going to take market share, I'm going to win. And I think that's exactly what he's doing. And I think he's approaching it the way he knows how. And I think when you look at some of the work he's done by getting Wallet of Satoshi, that took some amazing biz dev work, right? Like the fact that no one, I said this many times in the podcast, the fact that no one went to Wallet of Satoshi and closed that deal is just kind of surprising to me. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I don't know how that happened, but yeah, it's just wild to me that never happened before. The other thing I want to mention is I do think it's really interesting that they took the Venmo approach. Like clearly this is more like a Venmo move. Because Venmo doxes all your payments, and one of the reasons why I don't use Venmo. So I do think that is the approach he's going down. And it's very, you know, it's all likely possibility, Keon, where maybe he doesn't fix this and maybe he just sees it as Venmo. And, you know, like I say in the lab, like he's going to do things all the way this way. And I think most Bitcoiners are all the way on the other side, right? And then there's some people in the space that are taking the middle road. And I think you can't take the middle road anymore. You either have to be all the way this way or all the way this way. There is no middle road anymore. You trying to play the business strategy game of being in the middle is not going to work because this guy is playing for keeps out there. That's my take on it, whether it's right or wrong. But that's just kind of how I see it playing out. And the other interesting thing just on the VC side is I don't think there's one Bitcoin VC that's backing LightSpark.
No, there are.
There are? Okay. So yeah. I mean maybe if there's a VC that's listening to this, maybe they can, you know, nudge him a little bit and say, hey, this is not how we do things, and maybe that will convince him, right? But Like you said, who knows where it lies? Maybe it's on the Wallace Satoshi side. Maybe it's on the Lightspark side. But it sounds like you're saying it's on the Lightspark side or the Wallace Satoshi side. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, I think it's confusing because, like, from a regulatory perspective, they don't have to make everything public like this. But in the case where they do come under regulatory scrutiny, it's really nice to say, well, you guys, you know, law enforcement, if you want to look this up, you can. It's all public. I mean, we're not trying to hide anything from you. We're not trying to help criminals. We're helping you. We're exposing them to you. You can find them. Yeah. Just they're out in daylight. So I don't know. It could really go either way. And, you know, but I think Wallet of Satoshi should probably hide this from the Bolt 11s. I think it would help. This was the biggest surprise to me. When people have been breaking down over the last Lightning Plus in Berlin, a lot of people there was a talk by Steve Lee where he kind of broke down what's like how Spark is implemented and all the trade-offs they're making. And there's a lot to say that's kind of scary about that. But the one thing I didn't realize was this privacy issue. I thought it would be as private as Wallet of Satoshi was, which is like Wallet of Satoshi knows everything about all of your spending habits and how much money you have, but no one else does. In this case, it's just completely public.
Yeah, I'll just say this because this is what I tell people in the lab that are coming to build inside of Blub Lab. Since the end of, you know, since the ETF, there's a different game being played right now. And I saw it when the internet came. Like, I don't know if you remember Tech TV and remember I remember seeing it because I was still in college right before I dropped out. And I remember like the internet being this small little thing and there was no big entrance. Like there wasn't any big companies using it. And then all of a sudden, like all the mainstream people came in. And all of a sudden they started buying up all these companies and it was the craziest thing. I remember thinking like, whoa, it just changed overnight, like literally within a few years. And it started off like one by one, you would see these seasoned entrepreneurs come over and they just straight dominate. And I remember that feeling when I saw that as a kid, like it stuck with me because I saw it. I remember seeing it, like being in college in like a class and like on the internet and seeing these like things. And I didn't really understand that back then, but I remember the feeling of like, oh wow, like something's changing. Like the internet is changing. There's this, like, it's not the cool people that I would see like on these like Tech TV and these other people talking about the internet anymore. Like all these big media and these big like conglomerates are coming in and it was over at that point. And when I saw the Lightspark thing, like I guess whenever that happened, like 2 or 3 years ago, I remember thinking the same thing. It was just like, and I listened to David Marcus's podcast. Whenever he does a podcast, I always listen to it because I'm curious of how he thinks through things. And there's no doubt in my mind that he's thinking the exact same thing that that he saw probably in the early days when he came on board to some of these other companies, and he's just going to go out there and dominate. And you can't be upset about that. It's free markets, right? So it's weird. Like that's why, like I'm so open about collaborating with other businesses in the Bitcoin space and like being open about what we're working on and like sharing and helping other builders and building our own little kind of ecosystem of stuff. Because this is why you shouldn't be battling other companies that are in this space, because these bigger companies are going to come and destroy you. But you know, hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully, you know, he fixes that, and we'll see. I think it's still early. I don't think it's as big as a deal. The last thing I'll say is like just talking to some of the people here. Like Wallace Satoshi doesn't even work here in Mexico, so it's just in the U.S. And most people in the U.S. don't care about privacy anyway. So that's another thing. Most people still use Cash App, right? Okay. You guys can talk. There's no problem. We were just talking about the Wallet Satoshi stuff. Do you have a take on it, Topher? I already said my take.
It's not self-custody?
Yeah. Do you want to hear him, Keon?
He said it's not self-custody, I heard.
Yeah, he said it's not self-custody, yeah. Go ahead, Topher. You can... Did you want to say something? All right, hang on. Let me turn this on. I guess it should be... Yeah, that should be good. Say something.
Something.
Can you hear him?
Yeah, yeah. I can hear him.
Okay.
Wait, are you live right now?
Yeah, we're live.
Oh, yeah. No, you can't... You can't pass off your custody arrangement to another network and then just say, oh, your self-custody, like our wallet is self-custody because we don't deal with the custody. That's like not how that works. So if you don't deal with the custody and somebody else deals with the custody, then it's like, well, is Spark self-custody? And I'm pretty sure Spark is not self-custody. Like you're trusting them to delete the keys that would otherwise give them control over your Bitcoin. So that's not self-custody.
You're trusting one operator to delete the key. That's the assumption. It's somewhat nice in that you're not trusting all the operators to delete the key, but you're trusting that at least one of them, of maybe how many, I think there's only two right now, at least one of them deletes the key. Because I think it requires more than one key. I think it requires all keys to spend the funds, and if one of them deletes the key, then you are in self custody. But for that period of time where that key exists, you are not.
But as soon as the key is brought into existence, like if you're trusting them, so what you're trusting is that when the Bitcoin was transferred to you, that the key that allows the other party to, with the help of the operators, spend your Bitcoin, that the operators, or at least one of the operators, deleted the key. But the thing is that those keys all existed together at one point in time, and you're not part of that arrangement, and that arrangement still exists. So for you to say, well, as long as I trust that somebody deleted the key, that it's self-custody, is like, well, okay, but you're still, how do you trust that you have self-custody? It's kind of, it doesn't make any sense that you trust that you have self-custody.
Yeah, yeah, that's why Justin calls it trustodial. I think it is trust to show up to BitDevs, our KYCing into custodial wallets and thanking the heavens for them. I don't know how anyone who does that can criticize a trustodian that helps people not KYC and stuff. We now have another entry in the gradient of like from custodial to self-custodial, and the reality is Bitcoiners do not want to run Lightning nodes. Yet they want the settlement, the fast settlement of Lightning. And I think I almost prefer a solution that doesn't have KYC and stuff to the custodial arrangements.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not even criticizing the technology. I'm just criticizing the marketing. Because it's false marketing. It's like when eCash.
Yeah.
When there were people in eCash saying that eCash is self-custodial.
Mm. Yeah.
Even though they were backing up all their eCash to the mints.
Yeah.
And you still need the permission of the mint to spend your eCash.
For sure. Yeah, I agree. The marketing is pretty bad, especially when you have a company, like a big company like LightSpark, is trying to market to a more general audience than just Bitcoiners. They aren't going to get super nuanced on the terminology. They're just trying to grab followers and customers potentially by saying the right magic words. And, you know, marketing is always this weird gray area that is somewhat dishonest, unfortunately, or can err on the side of dishonesty, which sucks. But yeah. I think for most Bitcoiners, this isn't super, super confusing to them. Lots of people make claims. We see people make claims about decentralization in Bitcoin all the time when there isn't any. Same with self-custody. You know, we had people criticizing
you know, you have a lot of people from Cash App criticizing the Spark people, but then you have a lot of the greater Bitcoin community criticizing the Cash App people when they release BitKey because of BitKey's marketing. And so
that's what I was talking about last week, Keon. It feels almost like business interests. This is where I was saying that last week. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's literally nothing wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I just think we just need to be okay with that. It's the same fight that we're having with Knots and Core, right? Isn't that the argument with Knots and Core? Or no, that there's like business interests behind them?
The Knots and Bitcoin Core argument has gotten so muddy. I don't even know what the argument is.
We don't have to talk about that, but
yeah,
it all feels the same to me when I look at this. It all feels very much the same. And what happened to free markets, man? If they win, then they win. Like, what's wrong with that? Like, I don't know what's wrong with that. Is that bad?
I don't think, I think, you know, part of free markets is free speech. And so if your competitor is lying to your customers, you want to combat the lie. And so you go out there and you combat the lie and you try to convince your customers that they're lying. And I think that's fair too. That's part of the free market. Okay. Yeah, cool. Then there's not, I don't know, like, but free markets aren't sit back and let your customer get lied to. Like that's
but
not
it,
free
it's
markets.
Also it's also saying what it is. It's business interest, and I think calling that what it is okay too. Like that's all I'm saying. It's like it's business interest, and that's okay too. Like it should just be transparent about it. Like you know,
I think part of, you can argue the motivation, like some of the energy behind the criticisms are motivated by business interests. But I don't think the criticisms are valid. Like the technical the criticisms
100%.
The marketing or the technical criticisms, they're all valid. I get that they're 100%. Like maybe a little more energetic because if they can really get people to understand the criticisms, then maybe they lose fewer customers or gain
more
customers.
I'm not defending, for the record, because I think people think Okar is defending. I'm not defending David Marcus or Spark or anything like that. I have no pony in this fight or pony in this race.
Where do they do pony races? Is that
I'm just trying to make a really good. I'm just trying to make a really good clip right now by talking the other side of the argument, but also at the same time, I'm trying to, to explain that business interests are a thing in Bitcoin, and I think if I'm willing to say something, I think that's an important thing to say is there's Sackers, if you're listening, business interests do exist in Bitcoin, and don't fall for it. That's all I'm trying to say here. There's one piece I'd leave you with.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, you got anything else, Topher?
That's related to this.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think that Spark is purposefully lying to people.
That's what Keon said earlier.
I think that it's, and I've run into this personally. Like, you know, you can have honest engineers, and I know Spark has honest engineers working for them. And you have honest engineers that design a really fascinating product. And it's a product that has a complex custody arrangement. And so you can try to explain it, document it, try to teach it to people, like how it works so that they understand what they're getting into. But at some point, it gets into the hands of a marketer. And the marketer's like, oh, well, no one's going to understand this. So we're just going to call it self-custody. And so I can imagine the engineers ripping their hair out like, oh, well, no, it's not self-custody, but they're not the ones making the tweets. It's the marketers making the tweets. So, I don't think Spark is malicious. I don't think the engineers are trying to dupe people. I think it's just, you know, they built like a product with a complex custody arrangement and marketers don't care to try to market that or explain it. It's just easier just to say, oh, self-custody.
Are they
also
at TapCon?
People involved with Spark?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. We could ask them then. Yeah. That'd be a good conversation to have. Can ask the devs there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're ripping their hair out like, oh no, don't call it that. But you know, they're not in charge. Of the tweets.
Maybe point. Get one of them on and then we could really stay in our lane, Keon.
Oh, yeah. We won't be able to say anything.
This is our land, though. The next top story is I couldn't buy it, so I just made it. This is from Hypno. What is this?
Ooh, what is that?
It looks like they made a seed metal seed plate type system, a metal seed storage system, mm-hmm. where you stamp out the seeds in like English language, I believe.
That's cool.
Yeah, on these little plates that you then ring on like a key ring.
You could throw that on a fishing pole. No one would know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you
catch pretty dope.
You catch some pretty big fish, some whales even.
No, I'm saying like you could just throw those on a fishing pole, and no one would know.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a nice. I mean, you see a lot of these cool solutions. I don't want to talk about another solution while we're talking about this guy's thing. But I've seen a lot of really cool metal stamping things that have come out recently that are like way different than the big two-dimensional plates that you would.
Yeah.
Get in the past, so it looks like he basically had this problem where this is kind of the solution that he wanted and he couldn't find it out there, and then so he made it himself. He's located in Thailand. He wanted to manufacture it in Thailand, couldn't find anyone locally in Thailand who would even like return his emails, so they contacted China and gotten a really good relationship with the manufacturers in China, and they ended up producing the sets for him. And so you order a set from him. I think it's like $55 US, and you get 13 of these. Is it 13? 12?
Looks like maybe. There's 21 I saw, 14. Or maybe that's front and back, maybe. Or 24.
Yeah, you get 14 of 24. These metal seed plates that you can throw on a key ring, and then you have like a. You have the holder for the letter puncher, and you can punch your seed words into it, and then you put it on the key ring, and then you use one of these zip tie things to tie it together and make sure it's held together.
That's neato. This is from Hypno.
Hypno, yeah. Seedkeys.xyz.
Oh, he's a new stacker. Oh, interesting. Cool stuff.
Yeah.
Really cool stuff. Let's jump into the next top story. It is I'd quicker abandon Bitcoin and go back to fiat. This is from Jason B. October 6th, 32 comments, 3,349 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, Jason B. is out in South Africa, as we discussed last episode. I guess in South Africa, everyone uses WhatsApp for their messaging app. And Jason B. is a big WhatsApp critic, or not a fan. He refuses to download WhatsApp, but everyone he meets in South Africa wants to use it. And so he's forced to like try to convince them to use something else, and they're all frustrated by it because they're like, everyone's on WhatsApp. Like the network effect is so strong that people do not even want to consider switching because they don't see a point. And so this is where the title comes from. I'd quicker abandon Bitcoin and go back to fiat than download and use WhatsApp, is like the rest of that sentence. A mobile VPN company, and they like were snooping on Snapchat through some really interesting engineering trick. Yeah. Anyway, and then he ends the post by talking about for Bitcoiners in a way that he's having to learn how to have empathy for South Africans who are using WhatsApp. Is like, it's basically saying that, you know, like a lot of these people, they don't understand the privacy trade-offs, and they're maybe a little too taken by the current trend of WhatsApp. And so, you know, him coming to terms with that is helping him maybe see the no-coiners a different way.
That's interesting. Really cool stuff. The next top story is Vibe Tools, not apps. This is from Optimism. 12 comments, 12,500 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, this is Optimism arguing that you should, if you're vibe coding things, or maybe you should not focus on building an app for end users. But making yourself a tool that makes your life easier. And he has a lot of really, I think, good arguments in here that basically, if you can make an app by just telling ChatGPT, say, to make an app, then so can pretty much anyone else. And you are you shouldn't assume that you're going to be that differentiated in the market and can maintain any kind of moat. If anyone else can build the same thing you built by just spending enough time talking to a chatbot,
it's like any other. It's like any other product in the real world. It's the exact same thing. You need to have a distinguishing factor. You need to have some sort of thing that's unique to you, unique to your product. I mean, you see this all the time.
Yeah, for sure. So he argues instead, rather than like thinking about it that way, where you're going to build an app and you're going to sell it to other people, use the tools for probably what they're best suited to. And it's like building yourself small conveniences in the form of little programmatic automated tools that make your day-to-day easier. And that is probably going to be, I think part of this is him looking toward the future, and this is probably going to be the lasting impact of these tools, is that you can make yourself bespoke solutions that are just perfectly well suited to you. Where, you know, like you complain about Ecamm, you can imagine a future where you make the perfect Ecamm for car, you know, like that's kind of what you do. And there's another car out there who makes the perfect Ecamm for them. And so that's maybe the way to view these things, is it really just gives you the power to personalize.
Maybe at some point Pleb TV will be that, maybe at some point, but not right now. I mean, that's, I talked about it today at startup day. You know, Pleb TV is just like an itch that I want to scratch, you know, and it's something that I do think like spatial computing is going to be a really big thing, and every company will need some sort of video platform, just like we see podcasting today. That's going to be that big. So everybody will need to do it. I'm just somebody that always sees a little bit ahead of before others, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you see that. I wanted to bring up something here because we had a panel with Hustle, Jim, and Ted. That was our AI Bitcoin panel. And all three of those guys use AI, very proficient in it. Hustle's very proficient in it. Jim's very proficient in it. Ted, and I'm not going to attribute to who said this because I don't know which person said it. I don't actually remember. But one of them said, and I forget who said this, but one of them said, it was hilarious. One of them said, well, you know, if all these AI things, these chat LLMs are supposed to be, you know, and I would love to hear what your response would be to this, Keon, but like, and this is what they said, they're like, if all these chat LLMs are supposed to be like helping us code, you know, we would fire them already. Like, they would have already been fired. So you can't lean on them too much as far as, I mean, of course they're going to get better over time, but if you look at them just like employees, like, they would have gotten fired for being really bad at their job. And so that, I just thought that was hilarious. I think it got a chuckle from everybody in the room. But what do you think about that statement?
Yeah, they definitely make mistakes, and you have to like hold their hand through everything. And, you know, if you had to do that with a normal employee, they wouldn't be worth much to you. But it's worth much to what you're paying
these. Would you fire them?
Not if they work for $200 a month. Not if they did that level of work for $200 a month. I'd keep them on. Yeah. I'd hire a few more of them, you know. And I think that's what we're all doing. Yeah, it's like on a cost, like through the value to cost is like high. And the value might not be very high.
Yeah,
but the cost is very low.
I think for what I do with my job with, you know, these LLMs, like I couldn't live without it at this point. It's just as important as email, you know. It's right there. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
I find it very useful especially if I'm like doing something that I don't want to do or it's extremely tedious. I will reach for these tools and use them, and it is very helpful. But they do make very naive mistakes especially because you're not paying a whole lot of attention while it's like making the solution. You spend a lot of time trying to diagnose what's wrong. Like yesterday, I had it make this query for me, And it made a really naive error that I could not detect, because I didn't even imagine it was possible it made that naive of an error. But even as I asked it several times and was like, I think the error is here, it did not see. It was a simple arithmetic thing. So
I think the thing I hate the most is it absolutely, I don't do this very regularly, but I hate when I have to use it for speed. And yeah, I hate that. Absolutely hate it. And it forces me to, it helps you go fast, but I hate when I actually have to use it to get things done faster. I don't like that. I don't like that at all, because it makes me sloppy. And yeah, that's what I would say.
Yeah, it's pretty boring. I mean, the other part of it is it's pretty boring. It's kind of like watching someone else do the job. Another way I like to think about it, it's like trying to do your job over the phone, where you like can't actually, hey, geez there, where you can't actually do it. What's up, G? You can't actually do anything yourself, but you can tell people over the phone to do it for you, and you just have to watch them make mistakes. And you like, no, don't do that. Do this instead. No, 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 not like that. Like this. No, stop, please. And you're just trying to, it's like you're trying to program or whatever you do with these tools over the phone. And it can be just mostly frustrating. And that's another point that Optimism says in this post is that you're going to spend 6 months being kind of boring because you're not really learning anything. You're just kind of using these tools. And then you're not going to be able to, like, the problems that you didn't care enough to make the solutions yourself, it's going to have problems in the solution, and then you're not going to be able to figure them out without more AI help. And so it's like, don't focus on vibe coding apps, maybe focus on the tools for yourself. And that's probably enough. You should probably be happy with that. You can make your life a little easier with these tools.
What do you think about that, G, about the vibe tools and the vibe coding stuff?
I mean, reading this first paragraph.
Can you hear him, Kia?
Yeah, I can hear.
Okay, cool.
Reading this first paragraph, I mean, it kind of just looks like what a lot of normies do in general, let other people think for themselves. But I mean, as far as being a tool to help out and, you know, pushing your work forward, I mean, I can see it being a good use case for that. But if you're going to use it as like your habitual crutch and it's going to be become your identity, I think that's where it starts becoming the problem.
Yep, 100%. I definitely agree.
You
need to be more than your tools.
Did you see the AI panel with Tussle and Jim and Yeah, do you remember what they said about the like using it? Using these tools, I forget. It was some good stuff. I just forget what they were saying about it. There's some good alpha. Anyways, let's jump into the next one. The incident, I got scammed a few months back. This is from another Jason B. One. Bitcoin territory, 33 comments, 4,597 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, second week in a row that Jason B. has two top stories in the top five. This one is about the scam that made him change his NIM, which we covered last week.
Oh yeah.
I actually don't recall the details too well, but I think he just mostly was vaguely mentioning that he got scammed in some fashion that made him super concerned about his OPSEC. And then he changed his NIM and stuff. But in this post he actually covers the scam, tells us a little bit about what happened in the scam, I guess. Last week, he wrote about looking for Bitcoin miners in South Africa because there are a lot of solar installations, and he wants to help South Africans subsidize the cost of the solar installations and maybe make some Bitcoin in the process. So he was looking for Bitcoin miners for them. And I guess he was in Canaan's Telegram group, and someone in the Canaan Telegram group promoted another Telegram group that says they ship. You know, they ship Bitcoin miners worldwide, or they sell and ship Bitcoin miners worldwide. And so he got in that Telegram chat, and it turned out to be a scam. It sounds like what ended up happening was they had him send them Bitcoin, and you know, personal information about where to ship the Bitcoin miners, and you know, never shipped him anything. He eventually reached out to the shipping company and confirmed that there was no such shipment pending or anything like that. He said early on he noticed some red flags and wasn't going to follow through. But he really wanted these miners, so he kind of kept going even though he was a bit suspicious of it. And I guess he then reached out to the feds about it and tried to get them to maybe investigate it all. And he hasn't heard back from them yet. And then he also reached out to Jameson Lopp because he was concerned that he had given these scammers so much information that they might come and wrench attack him. But Jameson Lopp helped him kind of de-escalate that fear by telling him that they're usually different types of scammers. And then I guess he's still kind of waiting on the feds to do anything about it. But I think it seems like he's mostly made his peace with it. He gives a little bit of information at the bottom about the scam and how and where like the money flows, but they're pretty sure the money flows to a South Korean exchange once the scam has been executed.
Dang, that's incredible. G, you ever been scammed before?
Oh, plenty of times.
Really?
I mean, I've lost some money in the past.
Like this, though?
Not in this same fashion, but in this whole ecosystem, yeah, I have lost money at times. And, you know, that's why I tell people a lot of the times I'm here to help people so they don't lose. I had to lose money so you don't lose money. And, you know, along with these, I always tell people, take it as a lesson and not a loss. Now you know better. And, yeah, just, you know, improve.
Right on. I think that's true. I know a lot of people. So, I mean, even if they haven't been scammed like this, where you're like sending people money to send you goods or anything and they don't send you the goods, a lot of Bitcoiners started out as like shitcoiners. And so they were definitely scammed into like meme coin stuff and all kinds of casino stuff, which isn't much different. Involves someone lying to you to get your money. And yeah, it's like a bummer. I think Jason, the thing about some of these stories is that someone like Jason B is sophisticated and the red flags went off, but it like they didn't, you know, you get in a kind of state of mind where maybe you don't stop yourself, even though you can see the red flags going off in retrospect. And so that's kind of scary. Like I remember Samson Mao who used to be the CTO of Blockstream. He got one of those robocall like scams, the ones that June Seth has done podcasts on, where the guys convince him that they're like, they work at Coinbase. And he ended up giving them access to, I think, his Gmail account or something. And that's like, you know, that's a top tier Bitcoiner in many circles. Yeah. So that's like that's the scariest thing about a lot of these scams is like, even if you know better, if you're like in the wrong state of mind,
oh, gracias.
You can get scammed.
They pour the glass here for you, Keon. It's pretty crazy.
Oh, wow. Is that your mom? She's this.
No, it's, he's the person that works here. He's really nice. Oh, okay. Thank you, sir. Sorry. Gracias. Muchas gracias.
I thought you were in your hotel room. I didn't realize you were just out.
No, this is like the, what do you call this area?
Lobby.
Yeah. Oh. That's all the top five stories of the week. Gee, tell everybody what it's like been here in the Yucatan.
Yeah, if no one's ever been to the Yucatan, man, very, very chill vibes down here. Could see why they put a Bitcoin hub down here for sure. Food's good, a little different from Texas. Big pork guys out here. Yeah, but a lot of fresh ingredients. The guac.
Guac is really good.
That guac is amazing.
Dude, give me some guac and give me some, like, the ceviche?
Oof. Yeah, tomorrow. And then the beach is only like 30 minutes away. So yeah. I'm going to go check that out.
You guys haven't been to the beach yet? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. How is the guac better? The guac is pretty great in Texas, but the guac is that much better.
I think no seed oils.
Is that what it is?
Mm.
Yeah,
they don't do seed oils in like even in Texas. They don't do seed oils in most guacamoles, right?
Some of them, they'll chop it with like mayonnaise or sour cream.
Mm.
Yeah.
The eggs are good too. I had some eggs this morning. Really good. The beef,
it's just pork mostly, no beef.
It's mostly pork. The beef that we did try, yeah, I wasn't a fan. It tastes good going down, but not a fan.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that sounds good. Pretty great.
Let's jump into This Week in AI. This is September 29th, October 5th from Optimism. I didn't pick anything, but is anything here that it stood out for you, Kia? I just haven't had time.
Let me see.
I know Sorrow 2 got released. That's the big one from GMD. I don't know if you saw the announcement.
Yeah, but you need an invite.
Basically scared a lot of people, and it got people saying that, oh, we're going to get more AI slop, and the videos are done. And I'm just like, calm down, people. Like, there's a lot of really untalented people out there. This is not going to help them even more. Like, this is for talented people that are going to take it to the next level. And, yeah. These are for people that are the art creators. You know what I mean? Like, and they're going to take it to another level. They're not just going to, you know, there'll be funny meme stuff, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that I've already been more fooled than I have in the past on social media by certain videos. Mm-hmm. So I would say it is heating up. It's not doomsday yet, but it's getting close.
This reminds me of broadcast.com, and this is how early we are. I don't think people see where it's going. I think where I see it going, I definitely see distribution levels to this. Like, the future that I see is a movie gets released in theaters, then it goes to these platforms, and then it goes in a package to get remixed. And then that remix gets created by creators, and then that gets its own star in there. Like, let's say G was in the next Mission Impossible 7 or whatever, right? And he replaces it with G, and everybody's a fan of G. They get to see G in the next Mission Impossible, and I think that's kind of where it's headed. You kind of already see that in the music space, that you're able to remix these things, and I think that's kind of where we're headed. We're headed into that paradigm shift. I think there's going to be even more of these deals going down, and you're going to see the video. You're going to see the video market. They're going to close off first, and then all these people are going to steal their stuff, and they're going to remix it. They're going to run it through these things, and you're going to see all this cool, creative stuff happen, and then it's going to be this really cool thing. And I think once we get the Apple iPod that gives us, you know, that cool product that gives us the eyeglasses, Keon, then we're there. That's kind of how I see it playing out. But
yeah, I think I think
a lot about this stuff. I think a lot about video and streaming and where film is going. I think a lot about it. Probably too much. I should be thinking more about the other stuff.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, we all have our own interests. I think the thing I think about a lot is, like, you know, like, I think you could, when the gun was coming out, when the first guns were coming out, you could maybe hear people making arguments about, like, knives and swords and stuff, and like, how guns are going to be very similar. But then, and then as bombs come out, we're making the same arguments that we made about guns, about bombs. But then the nuclear bomb comes out, and it's like a totally different thing. We don't really make the same arguments about it. And, you know, technology, you have to imagine there is some technology that's going to be so transformative so fast, you know, kind of like a nuclear bomb, that it's a totally different thing. You can't talk about it using the past as your guide. And, you know, AI might be that thing. AGI might be that thing. Maybe not these LLMs, but maybe something like AGI might be that thing. And so I think it's worth being a little cautious about this stuff. Although I don't think we're super close to AGI or anything, but
I mean, I think it might be a big change. I don't know your eye, but I could definitely tell when a video's fake. I can tell almost immediately. Like, we were just here at startup day, and there was somebody who was showing me an image, and they were like, I was like, you need to fix this part because it's the AI. He was like, oh, how did you know it was AI? I was like, I can tell right away. And it looked flawless, and I'm sure no one could tell. But I could still tell. So I think most people. I think most people can tell, and I definitely think, like, Gen Z can tell, 100%. I think Gen Z can't tell. I think me, you, and most Moomers can't tell.
All right.
Yeah, it's kind of like, and you see that a lot with the millennials. Like, they're like, oh, it's going to destroy. Like, no, it's not. These Gen Zers, man, let them have this. Like, they don't have anything, man. Let them have video. Let them have video, man. I mean, what else? We were talking about it today. They don't even have Bitcoin. Let them have video, man.
They can't have Bitcoin? Why can't they have Bitcoin?
I mean, they're not adopting it. Gee, what do you think about all this? Who's right, me or Keon? You can agree with Keon if you want.
Man, I don't even know if this whole thing's a simulation. Is this all real? Is Keon real? Is that real?
Yeah, Keon, no. Is this really you or your agent, LOL?
I have to wonder.
Yeah, I had one of Jim's agents, too.
I knew it.
Study all of our podcasts, yeah.
Now, you got any thoughts?
It's crazy. Sometimes it gets me, too. Other people can see it off the bat, so... Yeah, I think you just got to keep your head on a swivel with all this still. You know, question everything still. The bad one was, I remember they did the Jeff Bezos landed, or I don't know who it was. I think it was the government. They landed their spacecraft into the ocean, and then it was all AI generated, supposedly. Yeah. And then I couldn't tell. But my stepdad could tell, and he was like, man, look how perfect the waves look. And
yeah.
The parachutes, they're flying perfect. I didn't notice at first, but yeah, then you sit and watch and it's like, whoa, it's a perfect day.
Yeah, I'm waiting for somebody, a startup in the AI space, to do like a recreation of, what was that, 1924 broadcast, where they said there was a Mars invasion or something. They did this whole, you know, radio broadcast or whatever. I can't wait for that AI startup to do something like that with this sort of thing, but just all over the planet at once. That's going to be cool. That's an idea for somebody out there. Looks like we got, let's jump into your, you going to go? Okay, cool. Thanks for joining us, G.
Later, G.
Pleasure, Keon.
We have your story, Keon, how to turn LLM Nokia into a real boy.
Yeah, Scoresby wrote this. He's basically helping us understand how LLMs work by using the story of Pinocchio, which most people are familiar with as they reach adult age. But you can kind of imagine Geppetto puts, rather than Pinocchio being made purely out of wood, there's like a computer inside of Pinocchio's head. And, you know, that's how he is thinking. That is the process by which he's thinking. And is he really thinking? How does Geppetto get him to think more realistically, to be more effective at being a boy? Is by if he's training Pinocchio to like imitate a bunch of other works or like things that he's read or things that he's been trained on, does that make him real? You know, what then? It's kind of this progression of Geppetto trying to turn Pinocchio more and more into what Pinocchio wants, which is to be a real boy, and kind of steps you through the process of making an LLM more like the LLMs that we're familiar with. And then it ends with the way many people think that we'll achieve AGI, which is where you know, using Pinocchio's nose as sort of a sensor. Like it's like a feedback mechanism from the real world, is Pinocchio's nose, where it gets broken. His nose gets, you know, kind of bulbous and then eventually breaks and hurts him when he's wrong about something, when he lies, when he has a hallucination like the LLMs have. And so that's how some people imagine we get to AGIs, by creating enough of like Pinocchio's nose on them. Anyway, I thought it was a good post for anyone who prefer or enjoys metaphor. I think it's a good post. It's also a good post if anyone is maybe not super technically deep into LLM stuff but want to learn more about them. Yeah, I thought it was good.
Cool. Amazing. It looks like Optimism dropped some alpha in there. Definitely check it out. Cool. The one I wanted to bring up was the Breeze. It's time to build. Breeze launches Global Developer Challenge. Did you see this, Keon?
Yes, please come in. Yes, fine. Which one? About the time to build?
Time to build, yep.
Yeah. You turned me on to time to build stuff.
Yeah, we were talking with Chris yesterday, and he was kind of going through the full stack and kind of the different options that you can do. We're talking about the prize pool. So looks like Guadalajara, the hackerspace in Guadalajara, is going to jump in. And I think we got Topher and some of the other builders in PlubLab are going to jump into as well. So we might have a battle of the hackerspaces. I'm going to talk to Steven next week and see if maybe he's going to jump in. They usually do because Alex and Steven usually win these things. So we might see. It might be some really good stuff that turns out from this. But 7K prize, 3,500, 1,000 selected projects. You also get a startup school residency in PlubLab. So if you win, that's an option if you want it. It's a global effort. It's really cool. I met Lisa from the Tokyo Bitcoin base. She's really cool person, doing a lot of really cool stuff. She's even doing her own kind of startup too. So they're doing really cool things there. It was great to meet her. And then of course, Chris from Guadalajara, and then Wesley from Tampa Bay was here. They just moved into a really cool space. Kathy Wood, apparently, apparently she has an office in Tampa. But they moved into a really cool space there. So a lot of really cool people are involved. It started on the 7th. We did a kickoff event here at the White Paper House. And I think the biggest friction point that we had, and I told Danny this, I emailed him, but the biggest friction point that we had is that you had to go to the contact form and then you had to like input some information to get emailed API keys. And I think, you know, that was a big friction thing. So that definitely stopped some things because they were like building. And then when that happened, that was like, they stopped basically. So that's, as you know, as a builder, that's, they do have like a whole chat group, so you can just jump in there. But yeah, the submission deadline is the 15th, so you literally have a month to build if any stackers are out there. Keon is a judge, and so is Lisa, and Roy from Breeze, and some other people. Kevin, we were talking about Lightspark earlier. And Jeff Booth, Keon's best friend, and Giacomo, another person that Keon's really close with. So there you go. A lot of people that Keon's like really best friends with.
That I've never met, but we are tight. We're
the only people I know are Lisa and Roy. Everybody else I know Jeff, but I've only met him like twice. He's a really nice guy.
I've only met Lisa. I think that's the only person I've met.
Yeah.
From all the jumpers.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Yeah, if you want to check it out. The other thing I wanted to bring up was Startup Day, day one. I posted a lot of the pictures there from Startup Day on day one. It was really fun, all the camera crew. They have gelato there. I didn't even tell you. They have gelato. They have really good gelato. I've never had gelato before, but they have a gelato bar inside the thing. It was nuts. Yeah, tiramisu, but the gelato, 3 thumbs up. If I had 3 thumbs. But yeah, really cool play. It was cool. This little kid, he wants to be like Francisco. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that cool? He like wanted to take a picture of Francisco. You can't see it. Oh, but dude, Francisco's turned into the Jack Maulers of Latin America. It's crazy. I've always said that, but I think it's official at this point. Like, there's little kids
Nick
that want
credit.
There's little kids
Nick
that
takes
want to be like Francisco. But anyway, and then there's like the television crew and really good group there. It was fun. And then we also did a time to build presentation, but the internet was just too many people. So we got cut off and then we tried going live again. And then I posted it again here. So if you want to watch me and Chris talk about all sorts of crazy stuff, we go on for like 56 minutes, but it was good. It was really good stuff. And then the last thing I want to mention is today's day two. I just posted some more pictures. So I'm going to post some more here in a second, but, Justin, our friend, Justin Shocknet, he dropped C-Link, you can run a Lightning node in under a minute. So that got dropped today, and he literally did it in under a minute. It was cool to see. That's the Wild Hustle right there. He had shoes that said Runster on it and shorts, dude. It was crazy. He's so cool. He's probably the coolest person in Club Lab, honestly. Sorry, Keon, you're no longer the coolest person.
Oh, it definitely was never the coolest person. I would say probably. Do we even have a cool person?
Austin's pretty cool. I would say it's Club Devs.
Yeah,
I think he's pretty cool. Person. He knows he's cool. That's why he doesn't come on Stacker News anymore. He's like, I'm too cool for you guys.
Yeah, he's kind of got my Grant. I'm chilling.
Yeah. He's a dev fluencer. He's too big for us. But anyway, day two was really amazing. Yeah, check it out, Stackers, if you're interested. We weren't able to record it, unfortunately. At least I don't think we did. But yeah, that's why you got to do these. You got to come to these events live. I mean, that's why it's good to come out to these.
Yeah, but, especially the small ones. The ones that haven't gotten big yet.
Yeah. Yeah. If we had more money, then we probably could have. If we had more sponsors, then we probably could have recorded it, but we just didn't have the sponsorship to do it. And the last thing we're going to bring up is Pleb Poets Zine. What's this? What's this, Keon?
Yeah, this is the 28th zine. I think we skipped 27, but this is the zine for this week after a short break. And there's a puzzle in it. And we have one classified ad. It looks like the Agora folks have recreated the Lightning Store t-shirt that we had. And so you can buy that from them. Yeah, but that is the new zine. And you can also buy, I think, a collector pack of 20 zines. I don't know why it's not all the zines. But you can buy a collector pack of 20 for 50,000 sats. And
I was like, man, Stacker News offline. And then I think it was, I forget who it was. I think it was Undisciplined. He said, you should have just brought a zine with you, man. And I was like, duh, I should have brought a zine. I didn't even think about it. Like, and there was like so many on EK's desk, I could have just brought them. Yeah, it's kind of dumb of me not to bring a zine at all as a backup. Don't be like me, Stackers. If you're going on a travel, on a trip, take a couple zines with you and you still get Stacker News on the flight. Something to read. Because I was literally like, couldn't even get in the airport. I was so sad.
You don't bring books when you travel?
I usually just on my phone. Usually on my phone, listen to music, and then I'll check out Stacker News and talk crap. You know, I like talking crap on Stacker News. It's my only social media. I haven't been on this week because I've just been too busy, but usually on there talking crap. Yeah, I'm either doing that or on work or doing work. You know.
Yeah.
Cool. The other thing I should mention, because we're going to be at TapConf next week. Pleb Poet sent me the cover for the DVDs. So I'm flying back on Sunday, Keon. So I'll see you. I don't know if I'll see you Sunday, but I'm going to pick up the DVDs. And then I'm going to take them with me to TapConf. But what was I going to tell you? But so the DVDs will be there. DVDs are done. I need to burn them on demand. But if you're interested in getting the SNL DVD, then find me at TapConf and we'll have some at the table. They look really cool. Do you have anything to say after? Did we record it last week? Did we talk about this last week? I don't remember.
I think we did talk a bit. Didn't we film the commentary last week?
Yeah, I did. We did, yeah. Do you have any thoughts about it after a week?
Oh, I thought it was fun. It was fun looking back at everything. We kind of were talking a bunch during the commentary. So I didn't really get to watch it. But I thought it was fun. Like a lot of moments that I only like vaguely remembered, I got to see fully again. And yeah, it was a blast, and surprised It was so long ago. It was several years ago that most of those, like, some, especially because it's like the first 100 videos, and we're like, what, in 300 now or so, almost?
No, we're at 192. We're about to get to 200. Or 193. We're about to get to 200.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We're closing in.
Yeah, we're closing in on 200. Yeah. But, yeah, it was. We're going to have those for sale. So if you guys are interested in buying them, come find us at the table. We'll have some swag. And, Keon, you're going to be at the desk? You're going to be at the Stacker News desk?
I will be at the table as long as I can stand it, which might not be very long, but...
Really?
I mean, you know me, I like to hide. I like to go to conferences and go to talks and hide.
So I'll just, like, kind of dodge. Are you going to, like, not hang out there the whole time?
Not the whole time. Certainly not the whole time.
Wow. So you're actually going to just abandon Book. Book's only going to be one there.
No, I won't abandon Book. We have some other folks that are going to be there.
Okay. So,
yeah.
So you're going to, are you going to make at least like a couple debuts there? Are you going to come in for like, you know, an hour spells at least?
I don't really have any plans with regard to it.
Look at this guy. You see what I'm dealing with, Stackers? This diva.
It's not a diva thing. It's like I just don't like being uncomfortable for too long. Anyway,
man,
we'll see.
We'll see. I'll try to convince some Stackers. I'll try to convince him to do 30-minute blocks. Maybe if I drag him and then me and him both be there, I'll make him more comfortable. I'll use some of my tiz whispering to convince him.
Calm me down.
Yeah. I'll be there most of the time at the table, so you can come find me there. And then we're going to do Stacker News Live next Thursday, right? On a Thursday. So we'll do that around. Yeah, I think I have a panel in the morning, and then I think we're going to do it like around 1 o'clock, 1:30, and then we'll do it live from there. Hopefully we have internet. If we don't, it's just going to be a local recording, and then we'll upload it later at the hotel or something, or at the Airbnb. B&B.
Okay.
And then yeah, it's gonna be a fast week. What else do we got? Oh yeah, we gotta do the top Cowboys, right?
That's right. People be top really disappointed.
Cowboys. Top Cowboys. Who's the top Cowboy today? Oh, it's Siggy 47. What do you know? It's always Siggy 47. Every week it's Siggy 47, Ted. Every week. I don't know what's going on with Siggy.
Maybe there's 47
up. Maybe there's 47 Siggies, you think? Is that what you're saying? Here, you want the mic? Ted says there's 47 Siggies, he thinks.
Oh, that's not a bad.
Yeah, I'm getting pulled guess, in. Actually.
He's getting pulled in.
I'm getting pulled in for my extremely important comment here that there's actually 47 Siggies. That's my contribution to this Stacker News Live.
What are you guys doing out there? What did you guys do? Since I've been recording,
I have packed because my flight is at 7 a.m. Oh, I thought really? It was at 8 a.m. So luckily I checked and it's actually at 7 a.m., which means I need to wake up around 3:40 a.m.
Oh, wow.
Which is a tricky time to be waking up.
How long is it going to take you to get to the airport?
I think it's 30 minutes.
Hmm.
So let's say I leave at 4, get there at 4:30.
Wow.
Flight board's at 6:20.
Wow.
So that's about 2 hours.
Are you going to smuggle anything?
Yeah, I have a couple Mexican children that were pretty cute.
I have some tortillas I'm going to try to bring across the border. Good. We'll see if they let me take them.
They're that good, the tortillas?
Dude, they were really good.
Yeah, wow. We'll
they'll probably stop me.
What are they doing?
We'll see.
Keon, you want anything?
We're going to bring you anything?
I don't know.
Are they gonna do? Like, look at this videotape and say, "We heard you say this."
Yeah, that's right. I guess I can't. I don't know, like a kilo of cocaine, maybe. Like,
well, obviously, that's just a gift.
Oh, that's not possible. They don't have that here. It's actually a really safe, safe town. Yeah.
It's like more like a meth thing, or like a.
No, it's a really safe. But it's like really safe. It's like there's a university here, and it's really safe.
Yeah.
Super okay, chill. But that could be the drug money making it safe. But
I don't think so. I mean, what do you think, Ted? Is it
this is amazing. Totally changed my perspective on Mexico. When I first arrived, I'm looking at the sidewalks. They're all like kind of beat up sidewalks. I'm like, this doesn't look like a very nice place.
Mm-hmm.
Like
30 minutes of walking around outside. I'm like, this is really nice. And there's something about the beat up sidewalks I kind of like now. It's weird. It's like, I don't know. There's something nice about it. It's like the sidewalks aren't trying to impose themselves on the road. They're kind of just chilling.
That's a good way to look at it. Were you surprised that when you look at the outside, it's not what it is on the inside?
The inside is amazing. Like, these buildings are so cool. This Bitcoin space that we went to, it's kind of like, I would almost say it's four stories.
That's a good way to put it. Because
they've got two different stories of rooftop. You can almost argue it's five stories. I mean, in the inside, the second story has two, like, it's like a half story. So they got a couple half stories. Super nice, bright colors inside. Like, actually a very large place when you start exploring it.
It's Mayan, right? Is that what it is? It's a Mayan
style. I have no idea.
Everything's really tiny here. Like, it's everything's tiny. It's kind of cool being a giant in a small country or a small area. I feel like
what's tiny? What do you mean? What's tiny?
Like doorknobs.
The doorknobs are tiny. The doors are tiny. The toilets are tiny. Yeah, because they're made for small people.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's really cute, though. It's really cute. It's like Hobbitville, but it's in a cute way.
I like it because I'm just the same size as everyone.
me and G are like walking around. We're like, is it uncomfortable for you? I'm like, no, it kind of just feels like we're NBA players.
My buddy's 6'8", and he traveled to, I think it was like Laos or someplace. The people were very short there in Laos. Like, the average man is like 5'3", and he's 6'8". And he was a celebrity. He was actually like, he couldn't get anywhere because everyone just wanted a selfie with him constantly.
Yeah. It's really cool. So we got Kube, number two, Undisciplined, Blockchain Boog, Ray Ruby, Coin Supporter. I don't think anything's changed. Optimism.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. Looks pretty normal. Looks pretty normal. Keon! What are you doing this weekend?
I'm not doing a whole bunch, I don't think. Yeah, normal stuff, you know, being boring, making sure I don't have any fun, which is getting easier as time goes on. It used to be kind of a struggle to be as boring as I am, but I've really gotten it down now, and I can just do nothing with ease. So it's a skill issue for most people that I've managed to really handle well. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing. What are you up to this weekend? You're traveling a lot, aren't you?
Yeah, Ted, what are you up to this weekend?
I've got a very exciting weekend. My mother is an artist. In kind of retirement, she became an artist. That's her thing now. So she is a botanist. She draws flowers. And she's gotten so good at drawing flowers that she's going to an award ceremony where, she's getting an award. And that's in New Orleans. So I'm flying from here to New Orleans. They're all going to be partying on the beach on boats and all this stuff. I'm going to be with my parents, going to my mom's thing for 2 days. And then I'm going to fly to TabConf. So Topher's probably going to beat me to the Airbnb at TabConf. Yeah. But I'll arrive kind of later on Monday. So I miss Monday, but I'll be there for the rest of it.
Yeah.
Congrats to your mom. Is she?
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
She's pretty good.
Yeah. Is she giving out art? Can you bring some art back for the lab so we can see her
stuff? Probably expensive, maybe. I would imagine, right?
No.
Oh, yeah, she's winning awards.
But there is good art. So I've hung a bunch in my apartment, and it's pretty good. She was on the news recently.
Interesting. Wow. Looking forward to see pictures of that. Yeah. Super cool. I'm going to be partying tomorrow. And then on Sunday, I got to travel back and then probably go to ACL. We'll see. We're going to see if we can get in there this time. Probably take one of my normie friends.
So you're going to go to Austin and then to TabConf?
Yeah.
Busy, busy.
Busy, busy, busy. Should be fun. Stackers, have yourself a great weekend. Make sure to hit unsubscribe so me and Keon can keep saying whatever we want. And we don't have to be forced to comply. Because complying never works in Bitcoin. Keon.